Okay, let's wait for a few more minutes until everyone's here.
Okay, I think I'm all set.
Oh, sí, está.
Okay. So people remotely on Zoom, wave at me if you can hear me. Wave if you can hear me. Okay. Okay, so Marta, can you hear me? Okay. You're on mute, by the way. We're waiting one more minute. Okay, so nice meeting those of you I didn't already meet yesterday. My name is Greg Lindahl, and I recently started at Common Crawl. So Sebastian Nagel, who's been at Common Crawl for a very long time, recommended this particular hackathon as being useful. He's gonna be here Tuesday afternoon to also help out. So I've been an advisor for Common Crawl for 10 years and helped interview Sebastian when he was hired, but only recently did I start working full-time for Common Crawl. So what is Common Crawl? This is actually our mission statement, believe it or not. Basically this guy, Gil Elbaz, he is a techie. He lives in LA. He sold his company to Google and made a lot of money. And he was interested in sort of what was next for search engines. And so he's like, hey, maybe we should have a Common Crawl so that people can come by. Not only can you study the internet in all kinds of interesting ways, because he saw the knowledge that Google had derived from the internet, but Google only makes that knowledge available. They don't make the raw data available. So academics are sad because they can't study the internet as well as Google can. And then also the next search engine that would, you know, maybe become popular, it also needed to you know, start somewhere. And so academics who research search engines and companies that want to do a search engine, maybe they'd be interested in Common Crawl. So that's the vision. And this vision was good enough that Jeff Bezos decided to give them free storage and bandwidth, which is a big deal. So what really is Common Crawl? So it's a 15-year-old educational nonprofit, and we're sponsored by Amazon. And so not only can you access this data from inside of Amazon, but you can access it from outside of Amazon without having to pay for the download. And this is important to all kinds of people. Historically, this organization only had one engineer, which is kind of crazy, but it's amazing that Sebastian, you know, by himself kept it running. And not only that, so it had an executive director for a while, but the executive directors never managed to raise any additional money. So for the last 7 years, right, soon after Sebastian was hired, there was no more executive director anymore. So one day Gil wakes up and he's like, wait, every single LLM that's mentioning what its sources are, say that Common Crawl is its most important source. So maybe this is time for the foundation to actually go somewhere. And so he started advertising for a new director. And my good friend, Rich Skrenta, saw that and we joined as a pair. So the data that we have, we've got 5 petabytes of crawls going back 15 years in 93 crawls, which are sort of monthly or bi-monthly. And it's weird at the very beginning, blah, blah, blah. And by the way, so if you look at the list price of Amazon storage and Amazon bandwidth, we get $1 million of free stuff from Amazon every month. So that gives you an idea of how big this is. On the flip side, it's actually not that big, right? So my last search engine startup 10 years ago, we had 30 petabytes of raw storage in our cluster, right? So if you're a search engine startup and you can raise tens of millions of dollars, then you can actually do this for much cheaper than Amazon. Okay, so who am I? Those of you who've talked to me have noticed that I seem to talk knowledgeably on a large number of subjects, and that's because I'm kind of strange. So I'm actually a dropout from a PhD in astronomy, subsequently a supercomputing guy. I went to Silicon Valley to make my fortune. I founded 3 startups, and I worked at the Internet Archive for 1 year. I've also after dropping out, I spent 5 years working in academia, most recently at Harvard on the Event Horizon Telescope. So that's actually what I studied in school, was very long baseline interferometry and then simulations of black holes in the general relativistic framework. So there's the famous image of Sagittarius A star in the middle of our galaxy, and that the dark part in the middle, that's the event horizon of the black hole. And the ring you see is actually a ring of gas. And but no matter what angle you look at it, it appears to be a ring of gas because of general relativity, blah, blah, blah. So if you've seen the movie Interstellar, right, they had a simulation of like this, except it was a cold, thin disk. And this is what realistic disks actually look like. So Rich and I started at Common Crawl 7 weeks ago, and I've mainly been dealing with performance problems and legal threats since. Two major publishers sent us nastygrams. One of them was actually really nice. He's like, we feel that large language models are going to be an advance for humanity. But get down to the details, he wants to get paid for his content if it's used in an LLM. And the other guy, there's this saying in English, both barrels of a shotgun, right? So you go hunting, you have a double barrel shotgun. So it was a four barrel letter in which he accused us of various felonies in addition to merely wanting his data deleted. So super nice guy. And by the way, my buddy Rich, so if you've been around a long time in the web content space, there's this thing called the Open Directory Project, which is a list of links in different categories. And so that was his first startup, and I actually worked with him a little bit back then on that. And then we subsequently founded two search engines together. And one of them is I'm wearing the t-shirt of my dead company, which is the Silicon Valley tradition. So what data are we actually providing? So we have five petabytes of raw crawled web pages. And if you wonder why we use the work formats and all that kind of stuff that we do, it's because that comes out of the web archiving community. So a lot of that stuff was actually originally invented by Brewster Kahle and people working for Brewster Kahle at the Internet Archive. The CDX index that you see that we have, right, if you want to randomly access our data without having to download, 1 gigabyte works. that CDX index is indexed by a funny thing. It flips the domain name, so it keeps domains and their subdomains together in the index. And this is for the main usage that this is intended for, which is the Wayback Machine. So in addition to the CDX index, Sebastian wanted to update our infrastructure. So we have an additional index that's called the columnar index, which Sebastian can pronounce and I always trip over. In so much as we've added additional metadata to Common Crawl, when I say we, I mean Sebastian, things like the CLD2 language classification metadata, which is up to three languages and a percentage of what it thinks that of the document that language is, that's available in the column index. We've also extracted text since 2013. And one of the weird things about being an older project is we don't want to change the new stuff too quickly. I think this is actually even before Sebastian, whoever set that up, they chose poorly because the thing that they use, HTML parser, this Java thing, it's been unmaintained ever since. Pick and choose carefully, right? So it's been updated by people a little bit before new HTML5 tags, but other than that, it's pretty obsolete. And I know everybody dislikes it because it doesn't remove the boilerplate and all that kind of stuff. Internet Archive, Common Crawl, we actually have a philosophy when we go out and we crawl. And that philosophy in the Sebastian era has been trying to make sort of a representative sample of the web with a tilt towards higher quality stuff. And that's sort of a hand-wavy description. And in fact, the way it's done is a little bit hand-wavy. There's repeats from the previous month or bi-monthly crawl. There's a random selection of URLs that are in the site maps, but only of higher quality sites. It'll crawl a little bit deeper than that initial seed crawl. So that's how it's chosen in the modern era. In earlier eras, it was actually chosen pretty differently. So for example, there's a couple crawls in a row. You'll notice that all the earls are the same as the previous crawl. And that's because for a while after the first engineer left and they switched crawlers, I was donating metadata from my search engine and they crawled literally Blecko's crawl frontier and nothing else for a couple of crawls in a row. So you know, there are quirks there in the data. It is what it is. I didn't even know they were doing it at the time. Okay, performance issues. So anybody who's ever tried to download a lot of Common Crawl has noticed that some days it just doesn't work very well. And it's not our fault. And the Amazon networking people, fortunately, are not too angry at me and us. But we're averaging 93 gigabits a second of user downloads, and that's a lot. So the Internet 2, right? So you know, Harvard's connection to the Internet 2 is only 100 gigabits. The Internet Archive has 400 gigabits coming in, and if we're averaging 93 gigabits, you might imagine, oh yeah, well, when it gets up to 200 or 300 gigabits, eventually our S3 bucket becomes very sad. And I don't think it's actually for networking reasons. I think it's actually because our 5 petabytes of data is on spinning rust. If you've ever priced solid state disks, you'll realize that the total of 100 petabytes in the open data bucket is a colossally large amount of money. And so I'm pretty sure that all of our data is on spinning rust. And that actually is the fundamental reason why it's challenging to download at high speeds while everyone else on the internet is also attempting to hit us at the same time. Okay, so one thing I would like to do is, so if the Common Crawl is basically unusable for bulk downloads about half the time, then at least I can tell you guys what that half of the time is. And so I've made some performance graphs available and I stuck links to that to the bottom of the I misspelled the conference name, the Hackathon Project doc, which Jinder mailed out to everybody. So here at the end of this document, I've added these extra links. And so for Grafana, it's currently on the same Grafana server as the Event Horizon Telescope collaboration, but you can't see their graphs. And there's a username, it has to have a login. So it's the username is Common Crawl with no spaces. And yes, those two letters are capitalized and the password is the same. And this is what it looks like. And so I've widened this out to 2 weeks. So the thing on the left is the CDX index. So the CDX index in this era is always ill. And the reason is because it actually has a CPU time n squared behavior when you have banned a bunch of URLs from the index, which we have by now. So, and I haven't had time to fix it. So that's gonna stop doing that at some point. But the thing on the right is what you wanna look at. So this is the time from outside of Amazon to access the first and second, access a file, which is a hit. So everything that's unlabeled is a hit, right? So that's the time for S3 transaction that's a hit. If you notice, here it is, it's running at like, 0.3 milliseconds, 0.2 milliseconds. So that's not too bad. And then if you miss, you've got this funny behavior where sometimes when you miss, it's faster than a hit. And other times slower, but it's never slower than a second. So you might think, oh yeah, that's not too bad for bulk downloads. Here's the real problem here on the bottom. So the errors, so this represents how many errors in a given group. So this means, that there's two lines on the upper right. So this means in a 1 5-minute cycle, both of them got 503s, usually only one at a time. And so this is like last Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday for a while, it actually worked for everybody. But ever since then, it's been throwing 503s left and right. Okay, so this is my idea of it. And this is not a global view. When I hit S3, I'm only hitting one CloudFront endpoint. So this is, if you're in San Francisco, it would look like this. And if you'd like to see better what it is for other stuff, Amazon finally allowed me to turn on this stuff. And so CloudFront is data.commoncrawl.com. So that's the bulk download from outside. And unfortunately, these graphs are kind of messed up. So this is in percentage. So this makes sense, right? So you're looking at it and you're like, oh, wow, 96% of accesses to CloudFront over the entire world is getting errors. So it's unusable, right? But here we go, right? So this is, you know, yesterday, and the error rate's 2%. Excuse me? These errors are because S3 is overloaded and it's sending 503s. And all the people downloading are downloading in parallel. So basically, this bucket is undergoing a denial of service attack all the time from Amazon's point of view. This is why their network people are irate with us, because all of our users do things like they spin up 500 instances, which independently start downloading. And when one of them gets a 503, the other 499 carry on as without knowing it. And so that looks like a denial of service attack. So be it. But this is only part of the time. And so my purpose for giving you these graphs are, when you try to download stuff and you're like, damn it, I can't get a single byte, at least you can look at these graphs and say, oh, well, everybody else is screwed too. And then a couple of days later, oh, it's working for everybody. Okay, so at least you can look and see, you know, if it's only you or if it's everybody, right? So here, yesterday and the day before, things were very happy. And that's actually true on this graph as well, because that's this gap here where there were no errors is yesterday and the day before. So if you happen to have been downloading then, you would be happy. Okay, so it also has bytes downloaded, and this is a messed up graph, right? This is sort of 200 gigabits a second and 300 gigabits a second, but I'm not really sure. I have to go read some more documentation because there's like a minimum 5-minute period for this. For this statistic, I think. Okay, so that's CloudFront. And then this is if you were inside Amazon. So HPLT is getting some Amazon time so they can be inside of Amazon. And sadly, I don't have a percentage of errors. So you kind of have to take a ratio of the errors to all requests. And again, I think this 620 million is over a 5-minute period, but I'm not sure. And so these graphs are going to change over time. These URLs are probably going to remain the same. I'll fix the y-axis, but the Grafana is going to move to a different domain name at some point when I get a chance. Okay, so again, you can see that in terms of 503 errors, right, and I intentionally expanded this out to 1 week. It defaults to 3 hours, which is not so useful. So for the last couple of days, again, this agrees. Things have been good, right? So we've had a moderate request rate. Whereas back when there were problems, it was a higher request rate. And this is everybody's downloads sum. So this one should be in gigabits per second, but it's not. And then this one on the right. So this, you know, right, it's only gigabytes per 5 minutes. And this is the crawler uploading the new crawl. So you can actually tell if the crawler's running because the way it looks, actually, this is, Sebastian's currently running the large MapReduce job that generates the web graph information, the harmonic centrality, and the other ranking stuff that we do by domain and by URL. And so when the crawler's running, it uploads for a couple of minutes. All the crawlers upload for like 5 minutes, and then they go off and crawl for 20 minutes, and then they upload for 5 minutes. And so you actually see a bumps on this graph when the crawler itself is running. Okay, so does anybody have any question about these particular statistics, which should be new to you? Just want to make sure while I answer them while I have the graphs up. Okay, so I hope this turns out to be useful. So please, you know, let me know. I'm Greg at commoncrawl.org. And if you have problems downloading and you look at the graphs and the graphs don't make sense, then by all means, send me an email and I'll look at it. Well, sure. So there's no point in. Sorry, repeat the question in the microphone. Yes. Okay. So the question was, is when you see in the graphs that people are having problems, should you stop downloading? And the answer is yes. You're not going to have any success anyway. And that allows the people who are not paying attention to these graphs, which are almost all the users, eventually, hopefully, they'll stop overloading everything. So, okay. So the question was, you know, what what do the error rates mean? So if you look, stare at these graphs, you'll notice that the error rate is either very high or very low. Okay, so very high, you know, means that there are errors. It rarely is in a state where it has an intermediate number of errors. If I were you, I would stop downloading, right? And so the sort of the upshot is, you know, how long should I budget, you know, to download stuff? It seems that downloading works half the time. And you should be willing to have a week's worth of delay in whenever you have a downloading project that you think is going to take a day or two. You should instead allocate 7 days and stare at these graphs. So, I apologize for this. I'm just, you know, this is as far as I've gotten on fixing the performance problem, is at least having a diagnostic so that you can tell, you know, that everyone's suffering simultaneously. So the question is there an API for these performance numbers? And the answer is for the Amazon ones, definitely not. For the Grafana ones, there is a Grafana API. I've never used it. I probably have to authorize you to use it. And if you want to go look that up, I would love it. But it's probably not something that I'm going to directly spend time on to figure out how to do it. If you point me at the right page, I will happily set it up and then I'll tell everybody and we'll all be happier. So please, you know, do consider trying to look that up. Grafana, it's kind of a pain in the ass and there's a big learning curve. And you know, the reason that the y-axis on Amazon's thing is it's a clone of Grafana, but it was forked a long time ago. And so there's some stuff that's different. That's why I don't understand how to fix the y-axis in the Amazon thing, right? So it can be complicated. Okay, so enough graphs. So here we go back to the talk. And again, to remind you that this hackathon projects document at the bottom is where I left those URLs for these three different pages of graphs. Okay, so back to slides. Okay, so what is the purpose? This is sort of a philosophical question. So what is the purpose of Common Crawl training to the LLM community? So it seems to me that the thing that Common Crawl provides is natural language interaction, because you can literally go to a, you know, generative image website and say, you know, I want to please draw me a green elf on a shelf with my face, and here's my face, and actually, you know, understands and can kind of do that. and when you give, you know, specialized training data, right? If you hand it, you know, questions and answers for some, you know, academic subject, there's not a lot of necessarily please and thank you in there and whatever. And when you go look at how LLMs work when you ask them questions, it doesn't really seem like it seems like that there's a lot of general knowledge on how to be polite embedded in every LLM, and that seems to come from Common Crawl. Also, all the toxic crap that is in LLMs, you know, you ask LLM, you know, who's the chancellor of Germany, and if you're lucky, it'll say Angela Merkel and merely be out of date. If you're unlucky, it'll say Adolf Hitler. And then, in case you weren't already offended, it'll give you an entire paragraph about how awesome Hitler was. Like, really, really offensive. And where does that come from? It probably doesn't come from the specialist training data set. It probably comes out of Common Crawl, right? So here you go. Here's the two sides of the coin that you want. Common Crawl data, but you know, please have it somehow be clean. Another interesting question is why are Google and Bing, who have perfectly fine crawls and lots of labeling on their crawl data, why do they actually use Common Crawl when they do large language models? And I currently believe that it's to push the risk onto Common Crawl of legal action. And also, there's also a fairness aspect, right? That if you ever noticed CCBot crawling your website and you considered blocking it in robots.txt or not, we always said it was a public data set. Whereas if you choose to allow Google to crawl your website, that's because you wanted to appear in the Google search engine, not that you wanted Google to use all your stuff for an LLM, maybe. And so that'll be interesting to see in court how this turns out. Picking and updating tooling. So it's fun. I've been having some hallway conversations about language recognition, and some people, you know, like CLD2 over CLD3 and vice versa. And so my suspicion is that all tools have significant flaws. And if you love a particular tool, it's because you just, whatever it does poorly, either doesn't bother you or else you haven't noticed it yet. And so, so for example, Sebastian was considering updating Common Crawl's language metadata to use CLD3. And so it's slower, and we have to pay for CPU time, like actual dollars. And it has, you know, more languages, but it wants to have text as input instead of web pages. So for example, it doesn't know the URL. And so as a result, you know, Sebastian, who's a computational linguist, right? His comment was, the language triplet of Bosnian, Serbian, and Croatian, which, you know, used to be dialects and now they're separate languages for politics reasons. It's very hard for a recognizer to split those. But if you look at the URL and you see it's a website in Bosnia, you know, that there's a clue. And so this matters, you know, for some people a lot and other people less, and other people may not have noticed it at all. And this is sort of, I think, typical for any new algorithm, both for text extraction and language recognition. So we don't have a academic dog in the fight as to which, you know, algorithms Common Crawl uses and advertises to people and makes, you know, easy, you know, computes for you. We would love to compute something for you, which you would actually use, but we can't change it every 3 months. So it would be nice if there was kind of some consensus as to the tool that everybody hates the least to help us along. And so I'm hoping with better connection to you folks and a couple other academic communities, we'll be able to sort of figure out, you know, if CLD2's, you know, time has ended, what we ought to switch to. And it's expensive for us to go back and recompute, you know, for all time. But it's something that we're gonna twist Amazon's arm and see if we can get some free CPU time for projects like this. If we want to retrospectively compute language identification with a better algorithm, hopefully at least it's pretty efficient, and maybe we can convince Amazon to give us a one-off grant of CPU time to go and do that for all 93 crawls. So we could certainly do it, you know, interactively, that you could ask us to you know, do it. And that's you, you know, pushing the CPU time onto us. So we could do it, we could change it going forward. It's certainly the case, right? But then that limits, you know, so for example, I have an example a couple slides later of how the C4 English is a single crawl. And I could certainly, you know, compute that one, right? But the C4 multilingual actually uses 80 of our old crawls. And so if you want the same language extraction for all of them, then we have to go back nearly to the beginning in order to make you happy for the C4 multilingual. And so just from a, you know, academic cleanliness point of view, right? I would hate to make a small group of academics extremely happy that the latest crawl has a better algorithm. But then I would make a small number of academics extremely sad that all the old crawls didn't have the same algorithm available, right? And in an ideal world, I'd be able to make both of those groups of people happy. Okay, so here's a look at data cleaning at from glancing over the C4 paper. And honestly, I didn't read it that deeply, but the TensorFlow people have a datasets module, and it knows how to construct a lot of datasets. And for apparently for legal reasons, basically this code, instead of downloading an already cleaned corpus, it downloads the raw corpus and it cleans it. So the people who did C4, they work for Google, they have lawyers, and it's not that they're unaware that they're doing this, and it's a single crawl for English because that happens to be big enough. But the multilingual crawl downloads 86 old crawls, which is a very large amount of data. And by the way, in our usage statistics, you would think that 2019-18 would have a huge spike in usage, but it doesn't. And then you would think, because of C4 multilingual, that the average usage or the minimum usage would be pushed up. And in fact, it doesn't seem to be. So whoever the people causing the problems are, they're probably not people using C4. So Allen AI made the actual clean corpus available on Hugging Face, and they gave us an acknowledgement and they linked to our terms of use. So that's plus and a plus. And why did they do this? Well, apparently they're less scared of getting sued than Google. So I contacted the lead author on the C4 paper, and he's a very nice guy, and I'm not complaining in any way. I'm like, by the way, we've gotten a threat from a major publisher, and you might want to mention this to your lawyers, and we'd be willing to share the letter with your lawyers. And then a week goes by, and I nudge him, and he's like, oh yeah, the lawyer didn't respond. And then 5 minutes later, he sends me another email. I'm sorry, but I can't help you with that. So you have to draw your own conclusion as to what that means, but it's been very difficult to have any discussion with anybody about the legalities of this. So there you go. Let me complain about bad words. So it has a link, a list of naughty words for 28 languages, and bad words lists is the worst possible solution to try to clean up documents, because it over and underfits simultaneously. There are ways you can describe naughty things that don't use naughty words. Imagine that. And people definitely intentionally write in this way. So one example that appears to have crept in a lot is actually fan fiction. Fan fiction is when a fan of a book, you know, writes a stuff in that style. And the fan fiction community, for whatever reason, is very interested in pornographic versions of their favorite classics. And they often write it in very refined language. It appears that a lot of fan fiction has snuck through the filters, and it appears in LLMs. And that's probably a bad thing, because, you know, what do you not want in your LLM that's answering factual questions? You don't want fiction, you don't want historical fiction, and you definitely don't want fan fiction. Okay. And the fanfiction community actually had an argument internally, and the biggest fanfiction site just blocked CCBot. And I'm like, thank you, self-cleaning internet. So to give you an impossible example, right? So if sex is in bad words, you're shooting out a lot of documents that are not naughty in any way, because scientific publications use the word sex, and like every single Victorian novel will refer to women as the gentler sex. You know, it was just a phrase back then, right? So you know, here you are shooting out, you know, the entire Victorian era because you couldn't figure out how to make a more accurate judgment as to whether or not the word sex is actually naughty in the particular document you're looking at. So here I have a couple slides now on sort of the differences in between search engines and Common Crawl. And this is sort of unique to me in this community, because most people who are doing LLMs have never run a search engine. And I used to be CTO of a search engine. Search engines do things in a pretty different way from the way Common Crawl does things. And the reason I'm saying all these things is I'm going to advocate that hopefully we come up with concrete ways of trying to use search engine concepts to improve LLM training sets, right? So search engines, they strongly prefer externally linked pages over pages that only have internal links. And that's probably bad for LLMs, because there's a lot of good knowledge on those pages. But when you rank a web page, the incoming anchor text is a really strong signal. It's a much smaller number of words that are in the entire document. And those words are very, very important for describing the document. And so especially if there's a naughty word in the incoming anchor text, you know, that naughty word is a serious, you know, it's seriously, you know, involved with that document, and you can make an easier decision to exclude that URL. Search engines also have a knowledge of this thing called a porny query. So have you ever wondered how safe search works? Probably not. So the way it works is you type the query in, and the search engine knows which pages are porn already. And if 80% of the top 10 answers are porny, then it decides that you meant to get porn in your answers, and it will show it to you. Okay. Whereas if less than 80% are porny, then it assumes you're not trying to be naughty, and it removes all the things it has labeled as porn. And this actually mostly works, because it's been the default on Google and Bing for forever. And in fact, it works so well now on Google that Google doesn't even give you instead of having a tri-state where you never filter porn and you always filter porn, and then this thing in the middle, medium safe search, which is, you know, is it a porny query? But now the Google setting only has two things. And this changed like 6 years ago. And it's because this algorithm now works perfectly. Okay. So if you want to describe, you know, this, right? If you want to, you know, do this to LLM input data, see, you need to make a friend with a search engine, right? But they can give you a list of queries that turned out to be porny or not. It's going to partially make you sad because the query team model historically has been a porny query. And I feel sad for any, you know, 12-year-old, you know, teen who's thinking maybe I could be a model, and they type teen model into a search engine. And I'm like, oh no, don't type that into a search engine. Because they used to be shown porn. And after many, many years, Google and Bing have managed to clean that one up. But there's a whole a universe full of phrases that I joke about all the time. Because, you know, if I say it to a friend, I'm like, oh yeah, and don't Google that. And that's because I'm guessing it's probably a porny query. Search engines are good, and they have a separate model just for cleaning up autocomplete, which is a very hard problem. And this may or may not be relevant to LLM people, just so as an example, right? If you type Jews are into a search engine, of course you recognize that's a dangerous phrase, right? And if an LLM represents what the internet thinks about it, the internet is full of toxic people with terrible, who say terrible things, and that will come up in autocomplete if you don't clean it out. And so Google has pretty much fixed this in general. They can tell what's dangerous, but they overfix it. So you could type in something and then you mention the word lesbian, and then autocomplete stops autocompleting. And you're like, what did I do wrong? It's because they've overfit for the word lesbian, which is a very fine word. And if you're an adult, even if you're a child, it's probably, you know, fine, whatever you're going to see. They don't have it blocked. So it appears that for the Jews are phrase in particular, it's now a human curated list because there's a podcast named Jews Are Tired. I don't know what it is. I've never listened to it. And then the third thing is Jews are from Judea, which it's not really true, but it's funny. And so you've got to think that some engineer in Google thought that would be a fun thing, because, you know, like the New York Times, you know, article about Google's autocomplete is full of toxic crap. Jews are is the example they used in the New York Times. So of course they've considered fixing that by human. Okay, so that's sort of a digression, right? So my hope is, again, is to have, you know, concepts coming from search engines that can clean up LLMs. So search engines' idea of bad words is not just a list of words, it's particular word combinations, right? Because there's a lot of, you know, very inoffensive words, a spiff. So that's actually an acronym for a sales bonus that a company pays directly to, a manufacturer pays directly to a salesperson if they sell that particular object. And spiff is also a drug word that's a marijuana cigarette. So how can you tell the difference, right? Bad words will never get you there. So, you know, AIs are great at disambiguating tokens. Surely we could use AI to do this. But even if you don't want to use a fancy AI thing, 15 years ago, Bleco's search engine used a naive Bayes, you know, classifier with, pornographic inputs to recognize porn. And it worked out really well on entire documents. And then in order to clean the autocomplete, we had to build a thing that used combinations of words, right? So if you have a very ordinary name for a human organ like the breast, if it's huge breasts, that's dangerous. Where if it's just, you know, women's breasts or, you know, breast cancer, it's not dangerous at all. And so we have a hand-tuned one of these that one of our guys created, and that works a lot better than bad words. Hopefully you're not typing any of these phrases into Google as we talk. So more support stuff. So I already discussed the naive Bayes classifier that we use, and there's probably a better, you know, more recent AI thing that you can use for this. The second thing is to pay attention to incoming anchor text. So it's already in the database you can download. The Watt files have all the outgoing links and their anchor text. It's expensive to invert outgoing links into incoming links, but it might be worth it. And then you get this anchor text, which is the, you know, the blue thing you actually click on. Those are the best words to describe that page. And finally, it could be that you could figure out token sequences that turn out to be porny by having a partnership with a search engine which isn't dead, and use that to exclude text instead of just bad words. Okay, so ending all the speculative stuff. So what is common crawl want to do, and how can you folks help us, and vice versa. So we'd love to crawl deeper for smaller languages. And I know that you folks have already actually started a discussion on how to do that. So our column index that I referred to earlier, it has this information available. And so you can figure out which domains have obscure languages by running SQL queries, against that index. But maybe you have a better way of doing it for domains that we don't even know about. And with that domain list and a higher crawl budget, then we'd end up crawling a lot of that stuff. And we might actually put that into separate works to make them easier to download for people who are only interested in one language. So today, you have to, because the WHET and the WHAT are not indexed in the CDX index or the column index, you can figure out and you can get the HTML for pages only in Bosnian, but going from that to extracted text, you have to run your own extractor. And so I'm hoping to add the WHET and WHAT offsets and links to the CDX index and the column index, and it's kind of in progress already. And that's the sort of kind of thing that, if you come to me and you say, oh, well, I'd love to do this, but your index doesn't support it, that's important to me for deciding what to actually implement. And people have mentioned this enough already that's why this is sort of already going. We'd love, I mentioned language recognition, but also, text extraction. So the text extraction that we do isn't very good, doesn't remove the boilerplate. And we'd love to move to a better code, but it'd be nice if, a lot of people would actually agree on which algorithm for us to run. We'd like to use AI to label pages, and we'd like to use search engine knowledge to extend our crawl. So those are sort of the things I have on my sort of list of ideas that I'd like to improve now that we have more engineering available. So there's two ways to do it. So first, if you have a language that CLD recognizes, then yes, we'd be happy to use that because we can go and figure that out, internally, which websites have a lot of that language, and then increase their crawl budget. So that's a straightforward thing for us to do. If it's a language that is not in CLD2, or you'd like to use a different extractor, then I can't figure out, the right domains to have a higher crawl budget. But maybe you can give me a long list of domains that should have a higher crawl budget. Okay, so it depends on how we implement it. If we make it part of our normal crawl, then those crawls run for 2 weeks every 2 months, right? So you'd have to wait till that comes around, or we could actually do an extra crawl, and then we could make it available to you directly as works, and then we would probably index it in the next crawl. And that gets funny because people expect crawls to have a beginning and an end. If we put in additional data that's in from a different time frame, maybe they'll confuse people. So I don't know about the index. I haven't thought enough about the indexing. So there, even if I did a special crawl, there might be some latency of a couple weeks or maybe a month, just because of date reasons and indexing reasons and the principle of least surprise for all our other users. Yeah. So the question is a very good one, and it's does Common Crawl always crawl from the U.S. and does that skew the collection of other languages? And the answer is yes, very much so. And in fact, it's part of search engine lore. So a search engine, if you're involved with the U.S. or you take USVC money or whatever, you're going to start with an English only search engine. And it's very important to crawl from the United States if you're doing an English only search engine. So, you know, my search engine only crawled from there. So obviously Common Crawl, wanting to be more general indeed, it might be smart if we crawled through a proxy, if we suspected, you know, that the website might have a particular language, but they're showing us English because they have a multilingual website. Then it might be nice for us to crawl, you know, through a proxy to another country. We haven't done that at all currently. It would be fun to run an experiment first instead of, you know, trying to go out and implement something. So that's an interesting proposal, and we should talk about it afterwards. It might be hard to do it, you know, in general, right? And do it a lot of the time as opposed to doing a little bit of it. So that's my suspicion is that we'll do it a little bit. We'll discover, yes, it does have some benefit. And then we'll kind of be scratching our heads in confusion as to how to try to do it a lot more. So then again, you know, especially for languages that are very rare, and there are companies, countries like maybe Slovenia is an example where English has a higher usage in Slovenia than usual, I think. And so as a result, you might be more likely to have websites in Slovenia show you an English page. And so any domain in Slovenia would be one that we would preferentially do this kind of crawl from Slovenia. That, I don't know, you know, right? That's just a guess as one particular country or language that it might be more useful for than others. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So for some of those websites, then they, you know, they have the some flags on the upper right hand corner. You're supposed to hit the British flag if you want English. thanks guys. So it could be that we could also write a recognizer for that kind of language switcher. And that might be useful. Also, another thing is that you can go look for URL patterns. So a lot of those websites, they have /en/ for English and /fr/ or you know, /en-us or, you know, there's a Quebec, you know, Quebecois version of French, you know, language, right? So those usual language tags, if you spot them in URL, so that also probably means it's a multi-language website. And we probably, and it even shows, like it'll show you /en all the time, even if it's only showing you the English website. So that might be a way that we could pull out those websites in bulk. And that can be done by merely traversing the index. So it would be inexpensive compared to trying to look in the HTML and see a language switcher. Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. So the way, you know, I would, so crawling from different places, the way I would actually implement it is by having proxies in different places and having the same crawler, you know, go through the proxies. And this is the usual way it's done, especially bad people who crawl the internet and they want to, you know, scrape data from people who do not wish to be scraped. There are you know, networks, they send you software to install on your PC, and then it's a proxy, and then they crawl through all those proxies, which are people's home addresses. So it's a common thing, which I have never done because, you know, I've never been that bad guy. So indeed, you know, a lot of websites do have a language picker, which was what I was calling it a minute ago. So by either analyzing the links, if you're lucky, there's a language code visible in the URL, or, you know, maybe somebody could write a recognizer in the HTML for that functionality, and then you could go look on. It could be that you only would need to download the front page of each website in order to use that kind of analysis, and that wouldn't be that big of a download. Whereas looking at the URLs is just involves looking at the index. And you know, the cheapest way of doing that sort of from in terms of a project getting it done is you know, for you to send a student to talk to me, and you know, I'll give them enough clues so they can go off and do the thing. Yes. So the question is, how would a crawler possibly be able to avoid machine learned? Because you don't want to drink your bathwater. It's an English phrase. So it's hard. And if you've been following the saga of you know, academics being, you know, nervous that their students, you know, their undergraduate students are having ChatGPT write all of their assignments. You know, just like there are plagiarism, you know, services that are pretty scammy, that a lot of universities pay money for. There are services that you know, purport to recognize ChatGPT text. They're often wrong, and they're often too CPU expensive to run on an entire crawl. So it'd be very difficult to figure it out. But if you have, for example, search engine ranking information, the websites that kind of content appears on probably are very low ranked. And so there's a place where a little bit of search engine knowledge might actually help keep the crawl cleaner. You probably don't know this, but you know, existing websites frequently have content that are written by people in the Philippines who, you know, are paid, you know, 50 cents an hour, and they kind of speak English. And it's an excellent wage for the Philippines, right? And so a lot of SEOs have employed people, you know, in poorer English-speaking countries to generate content. And that is a problem that is not considered solved by any means, even detecting that content. And so I would suspect it'd be more difficult to shoot out ChatGPT than that. So I would suspect that we won't be able to figure that out. And it's bad, right? You know, there's this special, if you're building certain scientific instruments that detect X-rays and you want steel that doesn't have any radioactive contamination, you need to use steel that was manufactured before the first bomb test. And there are companies that buy this steel from salvaged ships that are plucked off the bottom of the ocean, and then they sell it to scientists. It's the same thing, right? That the day ChatGPT appeared, before that date, any web page you crawl is guaranteed to not have been generated by ChatGPT. And you know, so it could be that the older crawls might turn out, they don't have, you know, modern knowledge, but for historical knowledge, those older crawls, you might end up weighting those, you know, that input data much stronger than stuff from 2 years in the future when ChatGPT will be thoroughly used by search engine optimization people all the time, and it's all over the web. Well, So 5 years from now, I do expect that the vast majority of crawled data will be machine generated, and that's just a guess on my part. But having seen the SEO industry, you know, go from, you know, zero to, you know, $5 billion spent generating bad content, you know, while I had a search engine. That's why I'm you know, worried that the worst result that you can imagine is going to be the actual result. So I apologize to the people on Zoom. I haven't done a very good job of repeating the questions to you. Do any of you have any questions to ask? I guess not. There's only four of you. Or at least at the beginning of the talk, there was only four of you. So
we've been following without a problem. From the answer, we knew the questions.
Yes, and so my apologies. I kind of repeated the question maybe half the time, but that's not very good on my part. Sorry.
More than a question, I have a comment. So from the various attempts to clean Common Crawl, I think that I have like 5 or 6 of them besides the C4 initiative. So you receive poor feedback, I guess. I mean, there are so many people that have tried to get Common Crawl and clean it in so many different ways. And we are still wondering what's the good thing to do.
Yes. So I would agree that, you know, so for example, you know, C4 is a, you know, the colossal clean Common Crawl index is, you know, there's a lot of smart people on that paper. But, you know, if you look at what they actually did, it mainly relies on a bad words list, and it's just not a good approach. And it seemed to me they didn't really care about the cleaning, and they were okay with discarding 90% of the data, and they thought that was okay. So I would not like to do it that way, and I would love to work with people, you know, on cleaning, because I've done it from a search engine point of view already. I would love to work with people on doing that, and I, you know, I consider it to be an unsolved problem at this point. And so I'm in a way I'm kind of happy, because it's a problem I know how to solve. You know, I've operated screwdrivers before, and this appears that the tool you need to you know, it's the screwdriver I know and love already. So I'd love to work with people from this community on that.
Good. For example, they have been, I think that 3 or 4 different attempts to deduplicate data in different ways.
Yeah,
I wonder myself, okay, who did the best thing, and how did you guys from Common Crawl possibly get feedback from that many attempts to output a better, let's say, or to output text out of that?
Yeah, so one fun thing about working with, you know, people building LLMs, right, is that, so you clean the corpus, and there's no good way to test how good it is. You make an LLM, and then you type in a thing into the LLM, and, you know, an answer comes out, and even if the, you know, answer is something terrible, you know, it's toxic, or, you know, it involves erotic fan fiction. You often, I suspect, can't figure out, you know, what tweak to the input data set would make that particular thing stop being the output of the LLM. And search engines have this same problem. So because it's very difficult to judge the quality of your crawl in a search engine until you make a search index and you start running queries on it. And so this is how search engines, you know, evaluate themselves, right? So I've worked closely with the company Yandex before the war, before the 2014 war. And they have a group of people in St. Petersburg who actually go and type in a bunch of queries into Yandex every single day. And so they started doing it for my search engine too. And that was the way that they measure quality. And they started doing that after we released to the public. We were a year late releasing to the public. And the reason is because we ran a crawl, and we you know, built an index, and we typed our first query in, and we're like, oh my God, we've been owned by, you know, SEO spammers, right? So you type in queries, and you get these crappy web pages back, and, you know, there's WikiHow and all the answers, and we're like, oh God, how could we be such idiots? So we added some protections against, you know, bad crawling and this and that, and we spent 3 months crawling a different set of web pages and building an index, and we typed our first query into it, and we're like, oh my God, this is as terrible as the first one. So in the fourth time, we got it right. And at 3 months apiece, we were a year late launching, and every general purpose search engine that's relatively new appears to have that 1 year delay in there when they think they're going to be able to release, but it turns out that they crawled the wrong stuff. But at least, you know, since you can stare at the anchor text, you know, for particular pages, and so it's very straightforward to diagnose from a search engine what you shouldn't have crawled, and it's very difficult, I think, for an LLM. You know that fan fiction will probably cause problems, but you don't know that a particular toxic output you got was caused by fan fiction. And so it's harder to diagnose, and I haven't thought about it much, and that would be a fun intellectual exercise to have, to try to figure out some good ways of diagnosing what you should have thrown out to avoid a particular toxic output, which is the only thing that you can really test for, is the outputs. The indexing was funny. We made an enormous improvement in our search engine, and the St. Petersburg people, like the day after we launched it, they're like, "What did you do? We've never seen this much improvement in any search engine ever," because they've been monitoring Bing and Google and themselves all this time. And we're like, "We improved an algorithm." If you want to know the answer to that, you can finish buying our company, which they tried to do, but oh well. It would have ended in tears anyway when Russia invaded Crimea.
Maybe a comment. We have recently completed a project which was about crawling top-level domains. Mm-hmm. We were looking forward to get more data for small languages, so we thought that crawling the Slovenian top-level domain was a good idea for that. We ended up having the biggest monolingual corpus for Slovenian, so that was a conclusion from this project, and also that we don't get so much. So we get much more Slovenian original and not Slovenian translation than going from, you know, English websites that have been translated into Slovenian, which is also good because you get higher quality data. So there are many, many, I think, points to maybe consider this for small languages. I know that this is probably too tailored, but we were doing that for 15 languages and it drove all good.
So I would agree that it's probably a really great idea. And I'll also mention you can install packages into WordPress, which runs your blog posts through Google Translate. And so similar to the problem I already have with SEO'd text in a search engine, and the problem that we'll have in a few years with LLM outputs in search engines, you can't necessarily tell that you're getting Google Translate output. And of course, you don't want to include, you know, Google Translate output in a Slovenian corpus. But here's the thing that you could do that would be very useful. So for every single top level domain, it's owned by its own country, and sometimes it's owned by a private company and this and that. And so you have to go country by country if you want to get the list of domains. Whereas for .com, I go to Network Solutions and I sign a document and I can download, you know, the .com, you know, every registered domain in .com. So if you have done the necessary work to get these lists of domains for all these different European countries, I would love to see those lists. Okay. Because we're not going to, it would be too much money for us to go to try to figure out for each of these countries how to get that list, you know, ourselves, whereas you folks are a lot more motivated to you know, spend your time getting those lists. So I would love to be able to see those lists, and that would be an excellent way to try to do a more focused crawl and get a lot more for these various languages that are associated with country TLDs.
Yeah. We can do that. That's easy to do.
That'd be great.
Yeah.
There's a thing related to it, right? That a lot of people love a .com, and so that makes it complicated. But it could be that you can actually find, you know, lists of .coms for particular countries too, and that might help crawl out.
That's great. Thanks.
So any other questions? We've gone on a bit long. So I'm going to be here in person through Sunday, and Sebastian's is arriving Tuesday afternoon. And he knows a lot better. If you want to ask, you know, about the selection effects of the different things that we do with the current crawler, he knows everything about that. And I only know vague hand waves. So you can chat with him in person about those issues. Yeah, so that's a very long question that I can't repeat very well. So, indeed, OpenAI and Microsoft and Google have all said, they already have, an army of contractors who do things like search engine quality checks. And that's why websites like WikiHow score highly within Google. And that's because they're essentially designed to fool the human quality raters who are required to rate, many web pages per hour in order to receive the whatever low wage they pay them. And they're also, it's not a job that, people who are postgraduates, work in. So these are not these are high school graduates if you're lucky. And so those people can be used, also to improve your LLM, and undoubtedly they are. So OpenAI doesn't have this lying around, but Google already has an existing organization, and Bing already has an existing organization that does this. So I'm sure they do a lot of it because they're already doing it at scale on the search engine side. For your human judgments, right? So in addition to incoming anchor text, right, the other thing that search engines use is what people actually click on, right? And that's a human judgment. And then that's combined with a thing called the bounce rate, which is if you click on something and then you click back to the results a few seconds later, then probably you didn't like that answer. And that's an enormous human input that every user of a search engine is constantly improving. Every Google user improves the Google search engine by clicking on what they click on. Of course, you can't tell if the person who's clicking is 12 years old or 75 or 50, and they do or don't have a PhD in linguistics, and et cetera, right? So it's a fuzzy thing, and only works because there's enormous volume to it. So that's what people already do, and that's one of the negative sides. So I don't know where you would find, if you wanted to improve, LLM outputs with things you found on the web, I'm not sure how you could do it. Like for example, by harvesting the click in a similar fashion, something analogous to the click rate. I don't see anything that's analog to that, where you would get free labor out of anybody. And also, if you're a new search engine, like me, you don't have any users and they aren't clicking on anything. So you don't have that information. Only the market leaders in the search space have that kind of information. And there could be there are companies who charge money to do AI labeling, and they do this as a commercial service, and it's purchased by many different AI companies, and so you could hire that service just like anybody else can, and that's the search engine companies don't use that, but a lot of AI companies do. Yeah, so if you use Stack Exchange, that would be the way you would use it, right? You would take the scores into account and how many answers there were, and all that delicious metadata that's there on the normal Stack Exchange question and answer page. You would certainly use that. So it depends on how Stack Exchange is implemented. I haven't gone and looked at their pages. A lot of things like displaying scores, they may be intentionally hiding just because they don't want to give that data away, right? They don't own the questions and they don't own the answers because their users typed the questions and the answers, so they can't sue anybody based on that. But they could, if they can successfully hide the voting data, and they probably could sue you if you tried to go get it. So if I worked at Stack Exchange, I would hide all the scores from a search engine. But that's just me because I'm a mean guy.
We should wrap up because the coffee break's already behind the door for 10 minutes. So if you have any questions, I guess Greg is going to be here until the rest of the week, so we can catch him and ask.
Yes.
Thank you again. Thank you. For a great talk. Will you put up the slides to the document? Can you share the slides with us?
Yeah.
Okay, great.
Bye bye, good coffee break. Nos vamos.